Today on Building the Open Metaverse.
We managed to build an open marketplace of avatar assets that kind of exists across many different virtual worlds and games, and that builds a bigger market for avatars in general. So, you know, would you rather pay for a skin that is stuck in one game forever, or is a skin for a metaverse avatar that you can use across your entire metaverse experience?
Welcome to Building the Open Metaverse, where technology experts discuss how the community is building the open metaverse together. Hosted by Patrick Cozy from Cesium and Mark Petit from Epic Games.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our show, Building the Open Metaverse, the podcast where technologists share their insight on how the community is building the open metaverse together. Hello, my name is Mark Petit. I'm from Epic Games, and my co-host is Patrick Cozy from Cesium. Hi, Patrick. How are you today?
Hi, Mark. Doing great. We have a very exciting topic.
Yeah, we're super happy and excited to welcome to our show Timu Toke, CEO of Ready Player Me, a startup that's made a lot of noise lately. So Timu, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. Great to be here. Excited to talk about the open metaverse.
Great. Welcome. So we usually like to kick off the show by asking our guests to tell us their journey to the metaverse. So for you, I mean, you've been around a while with starting Wolf3D and you're a gamer as well. So tell us your journey.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it all starts from games. RuneScape was my game that I played a lot when I grew up. And my first kind of hustle was selling RuneScape Gold to other kids in school, which also kind of taught me that virtual currencies and virtual objects and stuff are pretty kind of real. So that's kind of where I started. And I played a lot of different games when I grew up. And then when kind of 3D printing actually came around, I started messing around with 3D printing. That led to scanning things because I wanted to print them, and that led to scanning people. So I was just messing around with like scans and so forth. And when Oculus was acquired by Facebook, we thought that, you know, it's inevitable that VR will happen, and VR will be social, and avatars will play a big role in VR. And that's where we really decided to kind of commit to building an avatar company, essentially. Building a great way for people to create avatars and start from hardware and has evolved a lot over time to kind of custom building avatar tech for gaming companies and now Ready Player Me.
Cool. What a journey. And yeah, there's a lot of excitement around Ready Player Me right now. So, you know, for our listeners new to us, you know, give us the overview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Ready Player Me is a cross-game avatar platform for the metaverse. And what we see is that the metaverse is happening around us. Of course, people are spending a lot of time in virtual worlds. And the metaverse is not one game or one app or one platform. It's a network of thousands of different virtual worlds. So it makes sense for people to have an avatar that travels with you across many different virtual worlds and it's not stuck in one game or one experience. And in general, I think, you know, there's like kind of two paths for the metaverse. It's kind of like the more closed path, which is owned by, you know, the metaverse will be owned by one company or a few companies that make all the rules. We don't think that's a good feature for the metaverse. And then there's the other path, which is the open metaverse, which is a network of many worlds people can visit and travel between. And for the open metaverse to really have a chance, you know, cross-game services like avatars need to exist to link together many different virtual worlds and make the open metaverse possible. And that's really why we're building Ready Player Me. And like more practically, you know, what we do is like we have tools for our game developers that they can integrate to kind of solve all their avatar problems. It's a full kind of avatar creator. You can integrate into any game engine. So your users can create an avatar from a selfie and customize it with different clothing and so forth. And by focusing on helping developers, we're actually creating kind of a network of many different apps. So like we have almost 4,000 companies now that use our avatars in their games, in their experiences. And it's because of that, it's kind of easy for us to create real interoperable experiences where you create an avatar in one game and you can use it across the entire network, or you can buy an NFT for our avatar that then travels across the entire network of apps we have. So that's kind of like what Ready Player Me is.
So just for me, if I understand, so Do you always use the same avatar? Like if I create an avatar in Ready Player Me, it's going to look the same in every one of the games? Do you have things like level of detail, or is it just the same everywhere?
Yeah, so like on the technical side of things, we serve many very different avatars. So different file formats, LODs, you know, many different rigs, depending on the kind of application you are building. You know, if you create your avatar in a Unity mobile game, it's a very different kind of technical spec to compare to Unreal desktop game, for example. So we serve many different tech specs. And from the kind of consumer side, the avatars at the moment have one style generally. The assets you can wear on the avatars can, you know, depend on the games, and some of the assets are kind of in-game assets that work only in one game. Some other assets are kind of cross-game that you can use across the network. But we only have one kind of visual style. We're working on stylizing it and like having more styles that are like more realistic, less realistic, to fit into many different aesthetics, and eventually open that up for developers as well to kind of tweak and create something that fits into their world. But at the moment, it's one kind of visual style.
Okay. Do you envision having different kind of outfits? Like if you go playing a sports game, you probably want to be look differently than you play a first-person shooter. Well, you don't get to see yourself as a first-person shooter, but maybe there's a better example.
Yeah, so definitely, game developers themselves can create any assets they want for their own game. So if you have a tennis game, you want to have tennis outfits. But there's some other outfits that make sense across many worlds that are kind of branded and more general, perhaps. And it's all kind of experimentation. We're trying out different things to see what makes sense. But I think if you have an interoperable kind of avatar, interoperable assets, there's going to be some more craziness involved in that than an avatar system that is fully controlled by you and is very kind of just purely relevant for your game. So there's going to be some madness involved in that sense, or less control.
So what about the economics? I mean, the platform, like Roblox or Fortnite tend to use avatar customization as a source of revenue. Is that something you plan to monetize as well? And how would you reconcile it if the platform has their own monetization scheme on avatars?
Yeah. So, first, what we believe is that if we manage to build an open marketplace of avatar assets that kind of exists across many different virtual worlds and games, then that builds a bigger market for avatars in general. So, would you rather pay for a skin that is stuck in one game forever, or is a skin for a metaverse avatar that you can use across your entire metaverse experience? So if we link together all the different kind of closed economies, it actually makes a bigger market for everyone to share. So let's take Fortnite as an example. If Fortnite could sell skins that work across the metaverse in many games that Fortnite players play, then people will probably buy more of those skins, pay more for those skins. And that's kind of what we bring with interoperability. And also we don't want to be the only avatar in the metaverse. We're really trying to build the interoperability layer for avatars. So we can theoretically take a Fortnite avatar out of Fortnite and make that travel to different games. There's obviously a lot of technical problems involved in that, but those are all solvable over the long term. To answer the question, ultimately the open marketplace is going to be a better business for developers. That's what we want to prove. And that's I think feels obvious. So to add to that, we're not very focused on working with the kind of biggest games and biggest platforms at the moment. Our kind of core focus is kind of venture-backed games, virtual worlds, new kind of platforms that are coming up and becoming the next big games. And then on the other side, we have open tools. So any developers, building something cool in the garage can integrate our avatars easily. And we just want to empower all those games to get to market faster, and we want to grow with them. So that's kind of how we think about it.
So your platform is a level of abstraction between the experiences, the games, and the avatars. Are you guys using the blockchain or those similar technology to register the ownership of those elements on the blockchain, or do you manage this into your own technology?
Yeah. So with blockchain and Web3, I think first, we use some of it. We have experimented. We have been involved in some NFT drops and so forth. How we think about it generally is ownership in the metaverse is a necessary part. It definitely drives things forward. It feels like it needs to be there. And ownership is straightforward to solve. If you're just building a game that is closed and you control the entire economy, doesn't need to interact with other kind of games. It's kind of obvious to solve it in a centralized way. If you want to have an economy that exists across thousands of different applications and that is built by many different developers that creators take part in and so forth, blockchain and NFTs feel like, I mean, they are just kind of the only way to really solve that problem today. So that's why we're excited about it. And that's why we're kind of dabbling in it. But as a developer or as an end user, it's an optional part of the platform. You can use NFTs if you want and enable it in your game, but you can also opt out from that. The other thing we're doing is if you have an NFT that is ReadyPayMe compatible, connect your wallet, you enable it in your avatar, you can wear it in your avatar, and you can actually use it in Web2 games too. So you just sign in with your ReadyPayMe account, you redeem the avatar that is wearing the NFT, derived asset, and you can use it in Web2 games. So we're kind of like bringing more utility for Web3 or NFTs in Web2 games as well. And the other thing I would say about Web3 is I think like with interoperability and building more kind of open platforms, the main blocker for doing that is not even like the technical challenges, which are there obviously, but they're like solvable over the long term. It's more of the philosophy of the industry and the philosophy of the developers that are building the games and building the worlds. And what Web3 and the kind of rise of Web3 in gaming, the biggest thing it's like really done is like to change of philosophy. So developers that are coming up, they're building new games, they are more Web3 minded, they are more kind of like open and like connected minded. And I think that is as much of a that is as important as technology itself in pushing us towards the kind of more open metaverse.
I love all your passion around interoperability and open standards, and interoperability is a hot topic on this podcast, especially open standards for 3D assets. Then when we think of avatars, I mean, the layer of complexity gets kind of higher and higher. You go from simple facial animation to like meta human fidelity, all the way up to full biomechanical capabilities with muscle systems. So, how are you approaching, 3D open standards today, and where do you see it going?
Yeah. So, I mean, today there's no real standards for avatars. So we kind of like play around that. Like we support many different file formats. We support many different rig types. We support anything that the developer would want in an avatar. And then like we just serve a very different avatar for different kind of, different developers based on what they need. So we kind of assemble it to their target. Over the long run, obviously, we would love to see standards emerge. There are some kind of some file formats and so forth that are coming along. But it's just like so hard to make that happen. And what we kind of believe is that for the industry to really figure out standards, there needs to be a clear use case for, interoperability and how that creates a better end user experience and how that is a better way to actually, generate revenue with your game. And it's a better business model for a game. So what we are focused on is like creating interoperability with however way we can at the moment and proving that for a game developer, it's a better way to build their game. And when that is kind of proven on a sufficient enough scale, then the industry will, basically figure it out. Because otherwise, it's a very kind of philosophy-driven thing at the moment. It's like, okay, like it feels like it's a better future for the industry. But for people to really make a change, like we need to prove on a sufficient scale that it's a better way to do things. And that's why we're like focused on that we're not like spending too much time on taking part of creating standards and stuff, because we can work around it. And over time, it's obviously very important.
Yeah, and I think the focus on use cases to make the standards pragmatic, I agree with you completely. And there is a lot of discussion on when do you standardize, right? Could you be too soon or could you be too late? And I wanted to ask, I noticed that you use GLTF a lot, and I was curious how that's working for you so far.
Yeah, GLTF is working for us very well, and we built our entire system on GLTF. We can also serve other file formats, but that's kind of like at core how we built everything. And like we were building some like content tools to open up content creation for external partners and fashion brands, individual creators, developers themselves, all built on GLTF, the kind of the core way we assemble and create avatars and avatar kind of fashion creation tools and so forth. So, and that's worked really well. And yeah, we're very excited and that we went that path, and it looks like the industry is also going in that direction. So, yeah, very reliant on GLTF.
And I did make an avatar for myself in Ready Player Me, and I exported it as GLTF, and I dragged and dropped it into a web viewer, and it just worked, and I was very, very pleased.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. That's the idea, yeah.
What about USD? I think I've done some reading that you're also looking at USD.
Yep, exactly. We are. We're definitely looking at USD, and yeah, but it's not something that we get, basically our roadmap comes from what developers need and what developers want from an avatar system, and it's not like a high priority for us at the moment, but yeah, our CTO Rainer would know a lot better on the path there. I have a technical background, but Rainer is the main man.
I think you've joined the Metaverse Standards Forum, haven't you?
Yes, we did.
So what are your expectations?
Yeah, I mean, our expectations is to like collaborate to push the world towards an open metaverse, you know, and I think that's a very important important goal or important direction. So that's why we joined. I think we haven't been on any meetings yet because we joined kind of recently, but excited for the first one.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think, you know, we're still forming, figuring out the operating model and, again, trying to keep things, despite the high numbers company, pretty pragmatic and focused. But avatars is already a topic that a lot of people are raising their hands, want to discuss.
Yeah, it's up to 1,700 companies now, and avatars is one of the top topics. And, yeah, you guys would bring so much use cases to it. So
yeah, excited to participate, and yeah
because you've been doing it for some time.
We have definitely.
So let's talk about identity. I mean, we talked a little bit about using the blockchain for recording transactions. We talked about your technology stack to represent different to implement your avatar differently according to the depending on the platform. And then there is the topic of identity, you know, how do you want to represent yourself, you know, like in a social or work environment is probably different than in a gaming environment. And, you know, how do you approach that? It would be my first question. Can I have multiple me's in Ready Player Me?
Yes, yeah, you can have infinite amount of me's use. So definitely. How we think about people kind of creating their avatars, and what we've seen is like, it's kind of like creating your social media profile, which is kind of your avatar in the internet today. You know, like if you create a profile for LinkedIn, which is a professional use case, you create a more professional profile, you create a more professional avatar, you're probably not going to have face tattoos, and you're not going to wear a banana costume, maybe. I would on a business meeting sometimes. But anyways, it's a more professional kind of a look. When you create an Instagram profile, you create a more kind of a fun and social avatar. You might, be a little crazier, have face tattoos, have a crazier outfit. So, and that's kind of like how we see people creating avatars. It's for the use case. But inside the use case, people are pretty consistent in how they kind of like use their avatar. And that's also like, people customize their outfits and stuff, but the kind of general identity is somewhat consistent, which kind of makes sense. And I spoke with Philip Rosedale from Second Life, the founder of Second Life. And they said like, when they built Second Life, they kind of try to promote people to have multiple different avatars almost. So they have like a very easy way to manage your identity between avatars and so forth. But like high 90% of people only use one avatar or like one identity. And you buy skins and stuff for it, but you're kind of very persistent in the identity part of the avatar. We see the same thing, but it's all, it's all kind of early and will play out over time. But yeah, identity is like naturally kind of persistent. So that's what we see. And that's how we think about it too.
Yeah. So one of the expectations about the metaverse is, with the technology, it will have more engaging interaction with other people. And one of the things we've seen, over the internet over the past decade is the fact that, the sense of anonymity, the sense of it being anonymous, leads to a lack of accountability and leads to toxic behaviors. So do you have a point of view on, making sure, we drive more accountability from people's behavior through identity verification? Is something that you would consider for your platform, or I know it's a big topic. What's your take on this one?
Yeah. So, I think with this, like many other things, we could rely on what developers need in how they build games or whatever. So it's like developers are not demanding for like KYC and kind of like real identities yet. I think it will be the case. It will be needed even for like regulatory purposes. Like if you really take part of the virtual economy and you have payouts and like the sums get big enough and like the government gets there with regulation, I think it will be needed to really take part of the virtual economy. The other thing is like, do you want to make your identity public to other players? That might not be necessary or like it's might not be the thing that most people want to do. I think it all just depends on the use case in the platform as well. We don't have too much like firsthand experience with that, so we don't have a very strong point of view. But because it hasn't been a main kind of a requirement for developers, so far we haven't really like looked into it deeply. But I think we will need to have some KYC for the economy part, not very far in the future. Yeah, so I mean, if people were use their real identities in games, then that would definitely make them behave better. And when you look at the kind of like the traditional social media networks, then most of the big ones or almost all of them are connected with your real life identity. Kind of the network effects of a network that of people that use their real life identities actually are stronger. Because your real identity is more persistent, like it's tied to your real identity, compared to something that you make up for an experience that is like more easier to discard. I mean, Twitter is kind of in between those worlds, but most other social networks are very tied to our real life identities. So in that sense, like there's definitely something there to explore. But I don't think the kind of the gaming world and the game developers have really like. Have a lot of appetite for that today, and gamers probably as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've shared on this podcast that I'm a sim racer, and my reputation on the circuit is very important because that's what gets me to the right races, and it's a testament to other players that I try to behave. I do my best. But that reputation is not an attribute of the game I play. It's actually an attribute of myself. And if I develop a reputation in iRacing, I'd love to carry it over to Assetto Corsa competition so that I don't start at zero. So are these extensions to your platform that you could consider getting into, like managing reputation, managing other aspect of a player's identity? Or
for sure, yeah. So like, how we think about it is like the visual part of the avatar is the part that you have the kind of biggest emotional connection with. That's like the first thing you want to be, interoperable and persistent across platforms. But then that is a good thing to attach other kind of like identity parts to. So like reputation from games, gamer stats, reputation, your wallet, your virtual assets you can carry around with you. Like that all those things kind of make a lot of sense to build around the avatar. But the avatar itself needs to be there. And if you already have something that is naturally interoperable across platforms, then adding other stuff on top of that is kind of like obvious or easy compared to like going and being like, I'm a wallet for gamer, stats. Like it's such a uphill battle because it's not valuable unless there's a network. Like in our case, like we're valuable as a single player tool for developers because we solve a very clear problem of, you don't have to build your own avatar system. You save 6 months to a few years of time. So we're useful as a single player tool. And by focusing on that, we build the network and then the network itself becomes valuable And then you can start adding a lot of other things on top, like reputation and other parts of the identity.
So let's talk a bit more about the future for Ready Player Me. So first, congrats on the $56 million Series B round.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
So tell us a bit about how you plan to use the capital.
Yeah. So, I mean, our focus and our goal always is to build something that helps developers and is a great solution for developers. And there's a lot we need to do to just evolve the tools, make them more customizable, make them more flexible for developers, you know, native integrations to engines. You know, there's a lot of stuff like that. It's the whole kind of content tools part. So developers being able to create skins, create content for the avatars easily, submit it without our involvement. You know, that's a big part. And that's also the external part of the kind of cosmetics, which is like fashion brands. We work with a lot of fashion brands already. Fashion brands creating stuff and selling it in the metaverse, individual creators, kind of UGC content. And then the content is the kind of the base for the monetization. So once you have all the content, then you can start selling it as NFTs. You can start selling it as in-game assets inside games and really proving out the kind of the open metaverse economy thesis, I guess, or the interoperable economy. And those are the things we're working on. And like the main thing, you know, I am thinking about all the time is like, how do we get the next kind of awesome developer? How do we get the next kind of quality of developers? How do we evolve the product? How we all evolve the offering to get to the bigger and bigger developers, and also like be a great solution for anyone starting in a garage and building the next, you know, cool app. And of course we're hiring. So we're doubling the team. We're like 50 something people now and going to be 100. So like, please reach out. And we have a lot of open roles available.
And the audience for this podcast is a great target audience for you. There's a lot of, you know, very passionate and technical folks listening. And then you spoke about getting more developers on board. I mean, how do you think about your outreach efforts in terms of getting more developers to integrate versus more end users going directly to your website?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so it's been very kind of inbound driven. So like last year, we started from 24 companies using our avatars. We ended last year with 1,000 companies. Now it's getting to close to 4,000. And that's like very, very light driven by inbound. We have a small sales team and we're going to expand that. And that's focused on getting to the kind of bigger companies, bigger opportunities, always trying to go kind of a little beyond what we can get so that we understand what the requirements are and what we need to build and where we need to evolve. But it's very kind of driven by inbound because the product itself is very visual. So whenever any developers launch with Ready Player Me, a lot of end users create avatars. The developers, we work with them to create, like, you know, videos and kind of launch material. And that all kind of just keeps building more kind of exposure and bringing more developers. And, you know, the tools themselves are quite useful and easy to use for developers. So that's really what's driving it. And they're useful because we've been working on this for 9 years. You know, we launched Ready Player Me 2.5 years ago. But before that, we spent, you know, many years kind of custom building out our systems for developers. So we kind of knew what we had to build.
So it's pretty tough out there in terms of fundraising right now. I mean, it's not as, you know, money's not raining as much as it used to rain just 6 or 9 months ago. You know, we have a lot of entrepreneurs listening to the podcast. Do you have any advice about how to raise money in a little bit of a you know, cooler times?
Yeah. I mean, I think generally like the best fundraising advice I ever got and the best, and it's, you know, I've practiced it now is like, you know, just running a very tight process, especially in a low market. So like you need to like reach out to a lot of investors at the same time. You need to run a very tight process. How we usually do it when we go out and raise is like, yeah, like a 2 week or 2 week sprints, basically, where you go out to a set of VCs, you try to get to a term sheet at the same time, and you do those 2 week kind of sprints with different groups of VCs. You start with the ones that you want to practice with, then you go to the ones you really want to get, and then you know follow up with another group to create some pressure for the second group. I think that's kind of that's a strategy that has worked well. So you need to create urgency and like kind of like FOMO in a market where it's not clear if you're not going to raise like in 2 weeks or a month or whatever. It was clear that every deal is going to close immediately, you know, like 9 months ago. So now it's especially important to like run a very tight process and make sure you get some competition in and around, because that makes people move fast. And I think generally in a low market, you know, like there's a fight to quality. So just focusing on building a great business and you know, building something that is like a sustainable long-term business. That's what you need to do at any times. I think in very good times in terms of capital, people kind of forget about it and just try to raise more and build, you know, do crazy stuff. So I think it's generally good for the industry to have a little like a downturn. But you know, it's tough. It's tough. It's entrepreneurship. You figure it out. Yeah.
I hear you about quality. I mean, that's really, that's, you know, once you weather a few of those downturns, you welcome them, because you, in hindsight, you know, this is where you shake the tree and you can sort out the good stuff, you know, the high quality stuff against the rest. So as a CEO, you're responsible for bringing the funding in the company, but you're also responsible for the culture of the company, right? What kind of culture are you trying to build at Ready Player Me?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, so I mean, like, we are very open and flexible with kind of how we work. We're very kind of feedback driven. So, you know, any kind of, first, like, any ideas are welcome. We, you know, the best idea wins. Like, it's a very kind of flat organization in terms of that. Lots of autonomy for people to make decisions, to take a lead. If you're not very kind of proactive and entrepreneurial in our approach, you're probably not going to do very well. Like, we expect you to, like, you know, come up with stuff and take a lead. So that's important. We're like a European-based team mostly. I'm based in the US myself, and we're scaling a team now. But generally very kind of flat. That organization. And also, we care, we're very close, we give feedback because we care about each other and our mission and so forth. It's very exciting to work with a group of people we have. Yeah, and trust and be trusted is a big...
Yeah, congrats on building a great business and the great culture.
Yeah, so I wanted to say trust and be trusted is a big kind of value for us, because we need to be trusted by the ecosystem, all the developers that are kind of relying on us with a very kind of key part of the product. And that's why we need to be, trusted. And we need to be, developers need to be able to trust us. So we can't do things that are go against developers and the ecosystem. And we need to be, push things forward and not try to, build an open platform and then build a wall around it. That's not what we're going to do.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. For building an open metaverse and supporting an ecosystem, you have to get the developer trust. So we'd like to wrap up with two questions. And the first is, if there's any topics that we didn't talk about that you wish we did.
Yeah, I think we covered a lot of interesting topics. There's nothing that comes up at the moment.
And our last question is usually, you know, is there a person, institution, organization that you would like to give a shout out to today?
Oh, yeah, I should. I'll give a shout out to Hyperworld. I think they're building an awesome web-based platform, very easy tools to create virtual worlds. I think they've been at it for a while and building some awesome stuff. And we're launching an integration with them very soon. So Hyperworld is my shout out. Check it out.
So thank you, Timo, for this, that insight into Ready Player Me and a fast growing company in an important domain. Trust and be trusted. I'll remember that. I think it's a great tagline. So Timo Toke, CEO of Ready Player Me, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. That was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
And Patrick, thank you so much as well for being here with me, and thank you to our audience. Keep on hitting us on social, letting us know about this podcast, who you want to hear for, the feedback. We're also a feedback-driven organization team. We try to act on that and be very reactive to the feedback of our listeners. So thank you, everybody. Thank you, Timo. Thank you, Patrick. Bye-bye.